Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics Radio can be heard on 1480 AM KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix and worldwide on the internet at www.exopoliticsradio.com. Our audio archives, which again are a public and cosmic resource and which are open 24/7, free to the public, and which we encourage you to visit early, late, and often, are at www.exopoliticsradio.com. And by the way, be sure and patronize the various products that we have there, including a special online edition of the book Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, the book that helped launch the science and discipline of exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, which can be downloaded into your computers at a special price of $9.95, which these days is a bargain. As they say, if your eye falls on a bargain, pick it up. I am your faithful, elusive, and ever-present host, Alfred Weber. Well, this week we have a special interview with our exopolitics commentator, Dr. Michael Sala, director of the Exopolitics Institute, part two on our ongoing series of extraterrestrials, UFOs, and the First Amendment, because it turns out that the First Amendment, which is intended to protect freedom of speech and freedom of the press from the government, has been shredded in the case of ETs and UFOs. And that's the subject of our Exopolitics Radio commentary this week. If we go to the case of Angelia Joyner, who is the latest victim of the shredding of the First Amendment since day one, since the late 1940s, in the case of ETs, UFOs, which is why this subject is the subject of ridicule and vilification and has been for the last 60 years since the late 1940s in the media, which is why if you were anywhere near the canon in academia and you deviated from the canon from holding that all intelligent life ended at Earth's geostationary orbit, and you held that there were other creatures than ourselves who were intelligent in the universe, and heaven forbid that intelligent life was now visiting planet Earth, you would lose your job and be subject to public ridicule and harassment, and you'd be destroyed as an economic entity, as happened to many. If you were in the government, similar things would happen, and if you were lucky, you would not be assassinated. Similarly, if you were in any of the other professions, similar things would happen to you. If you were in the press and you reported on extraterrestrials or UFOs, other than in a debunking fashion, you would lose your job and be persecuted. Well, that policy has been in place since the late 1940s, early 1950s, and we can now document it. And this week's episode of Exopolitics Radio, our interview with Dr. Michael Sala, documents it. And Angelia Joyner, the reporter on the Stephenville, Texas newspaper, who was fired from her job in early February, February 7th, 2008, for reporting on a giant, by some standards, UFO, a mile long, half a mile wide craft that literally hovered over the town of Stephenville, Texas on the night of January 8th, Elvis Presley's birthday, 2008, and has since been, the UFO sightings have been continuing, but that sighting was seen by multiple witnesses. It was covered by CNN on Larry King Live. It was within 60 miles of the Texas White House. There were F-15s scrambling after it. The Air Force flip-flopped on its story. And Ms. Joyner continued her reporting on typical U.S. Air Force and men in black harassment of one of the witnesses through black helicopters and through kind of government agents who continued harassment of him under long-standing U.S. Air Force and other U.S. government policies. Well, she was fired from her job. And this is part of a continuing policy that goes back to the early 1950s. Let's read from a, first of all, to document this policy, let's go back to a Central Intelligence document, CIA document 8/1/1952, that was released under the Freedom of Information Act. It's a document dated August 1st, 1952. Pursuant to your request for overall evaluation of the flying saucers and associated report, the following is pertinent. Notwithstanding the following tentative facts, so long as a series of reports remains, quote, unexplained, interplanetary aspects and alien origin not being thoroughly excluded from consideration, all of this is baffle garb. The CIA was having extraterrestrial human liaison programs at the time. So this is totally smoke and mirrors. Caution requires that intelligence continue coverage of the subject. It is recommended that CIA surveillance of the subject matter in coordination with proper authorities be continued. This is CIA language on an official intergovernmental memo that was made public through the Freedom of Information Act. It is strongly urged, however, that no indication of CIA interest or concern reach the press or public in view of their probable alarmist tendencies to accept such interest as confirmatory of the soundness of, quote, unpublished facts in the hands of the U.S. government. That's CIA document 8/1/1952 FOIA. Now, look at the layers of disinformation in this. First of all, this is a CIA document. It's designed to be discovered because at this time, there were within the CIA extraterrestrial human liaison programs, and the CIA, through various groups, was in charge of the extraterrestrial program, and they knew full well that there were extraterrestrials, but they created this kind of science fiction-y, its language is like something that you would find in a 1950s B-grade science fiction movie. So it's the sort of thing that you create to release, to create baffle guard. So that's what they did. And subsequent to this, in 1952, they created the Robertson Panel, which found that 90% or more of UFO sightings were in fact swamp gas or the planet Venus, and that, quote, the U.S. government should undertake a public relations or a campaign in order to, quote, debunk UFOs and reduce public interest in the subject, and that civilian UFO groups should be monitored. Okay? So that's what the Robertson panel concluded and gave as public policy to the Central Intelligence Agency in 1952. They said that what government policy has to become is that the U.S. government has to go out and debunk all UFO sightings, ridicule them, and ridicule the people that see them, and you have to monitor all UFO groups. Okay? Now, obviously, what that is that in order to hide the extraterrestrial human liaison programs, and in order to hide the privatization of the extraterrestrial issue and not allow any human interest, any of the human populations, I mean, we are the cosmic citizens, not to allow that, then this is an authorization of the government to attack the citizenry with psychological warfare, to destroy lives as economic entities, to destroy individuals as they have over the last 60 years, and also to infiltrate all of the UFO groups. And that's what they did in 1952. And that's been the standing policy over the last 60 years. And here it is, all in black and white, through the Robertson panel and through the CIA document 8-1-1952. And so, when we had the most recent example of this infiltration and of the firing of Texas reporter Angelia Joyner, which occurred on February 7th, 2008, as a result of her reporting of the government harassment of the witness, which was undertaken in direct response to this policy set down in 1952, that's over 50 years ago. We're now in 2008. That's 56 years ago. They've had a standing policy in the U.S. government, which now has a $600 billion defense budget and has a $1.5 trillion black budget to go out and destroy the lives of any witnesses of UFO sightings. That's what's happening, folks out there. You Arizonans, you John McCainian, you know, under the subject of John McCain, you people are soon going to be either voting for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, you people who want change. Well, this is where we need change. We need to take a broom and sweep these guys out, starting in 1952. What is the CIA? The CIA was founded by Skull and Bones people, that's the Brotherhood of Death, by the Rockefeller people, and by the City of London. That's exactly what it is. This is the world's elite, the monarchists, and the capitalists getting together to have their own private branch of government so that they can own the technology of downed UFO craft and of those extraterrestrial civilizations with whom they make deals to weaponize more so they can protect their own petroleum nuclear civilization and keep us 95% of the human species or 99.9% that aren't part of this hyper elite of retrogrades in a virtual slave civilization on this planet. And that's the long and short of it. And you're still having the Angelia Joiners, the reporters, being fired on February 7th, 2008, because they're reporting this as a result of a policy that was laid down in 1952. During the Eisenhower years, I think Eisenhower just, that was the year that Truman was booted out and Eisenhower came in. So wake up, people. You have nothing to lose but your chains. This is an official Exopolitics Radio commentary. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Tonight, we have again our commentator, Dr. Michael Sala, author of Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence, who is a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, the scholarly study of the main actors, institutions, and processes associated with an extraterrestrial presence that is not acknowledged to the general public, elected officials, or the mass media. Dr. Sala is the executive director of the Exopolitics Institute in Kona, Hawaii, whose website is exopoliticsinstitute.org. Welcome, Michael.
Glad to be back, Alfred, and we're going to be talking about some important issues today, so I'm looking forward to the segment.
Great. Well, yes, that's the issue that we've been having, an extraordinary flap or season, as it were, of, I hate to use the word UFO sighting because to describe the event of a craft that was witnessed a mile long, a half a mile wide, over Stephenville, Texas, starting on January 8th, 2008, by numerous witnesses within 60 miles of the Texas White House, and then apparently with other phenomena continuing then, the matter having been on the mainstream media, on CNN, Larry King Live, but then what we'll be discussing here, when a reporter, Angelia Joiner, for the Stephenville newspaper, began going in depth into the issue and describing the harassment of witnesses by apparent government agencies, she was summarily dismissed from the newspaper. And I wondered if you could paint for us some of the facts that surrounded that particular case.
Well, the most important thing here is that the sighting began on January 8th, and it wasn't just an isolated sighting. I mean, there were over 40 witnesses that saw this object that night and also during the day. And some of the descriptions, as you mentioned, were that it was a mile long and half a mile wide, so that in itself is quite an extraordinary sighting. What made this Stephenville sighting a very unusual case was that the national media actually covered the story. It was very unusual. I guess it follows upon the presidential election debate where the UFO issue was raised, and also Larry King doing a few special press conferences in November, on November 12th last year, involving some high-level officials talking about their UFO sighting. And so I think just this heightened consciousness in the mass public and in the media, the press covered the story. And the local reporter, her name was Angela Joiner, she covered the story in a local paper called the Stephenville Empire Tribune, and her story was covered in the Associated Press by another reporter, Angela Brown. And what essentially happened was that the story made national headlines, and then you got CNN and the world media wanting to cover this developing story in Stephenville, Texas, and there just happened to be more sightings and more developments in the case. And so Angela Joyner had worked at her newspaper for 18 months, and she was covering the story, and the newspaper itself was doing bumper sales, and there was national attention, and Larry King Live was doing interviews of Angela Joyner. So she was really getting a lot of attention. And towards the end of January, what happened was that her employer signified to her, both the publisher and the managing editor, signified that they were unhappy of her continued coverage of the story. Now, they justified that on the basis that there needed to be more local content in Angela's work, and that she was putting too much attention on the UFO issue. And I think Angela Joyner kind of felt a little conflicted, because she, on the one hand, had been really hooked on this UFO phenomenon and the issues surrounding it. And so she was definitely wanting to give it more attention, and it was getting a lot of mainstream press coverage. And then on the other hand, she felt some degree of guilt that she wasn't covering the local stories sufficiently. And so, given her publisher's unhappiness, she felt obliged to offer her resignation on the 1st of February, which is what she did. So in any case, she continued to try to do local stories as well as do more of the UFO sighting stories. And she did two more stories. One involved the harassment of one of the key witnesses, Ricky Sorrell. And Sorrell's case is interesting because this brings out the exopolitical dimension quite nicely, is that he saw the craft during the day, and it was, as described, a mile long and half a mile wide, and it was a rectangular shape. So he saw this in broad daylight, and he has a very solid reputation in the town, and so people were taking him at his word that this is what he saw. And what began to happen was, as he shared that story and Angela Joyner began to report on what he had described, he began to get harassed. He began receiving phone calls at night telling him to stop talking about this. The phone caller acted as though he was a military official. Also, he had a late-night visitor at about 2:30 in the morning. His dogs began barking, and he looked outside, and there was someone kind of monitoring his place who looked very threatening, who had a military presence. And so he was experiencing that kind of harassment. There was also helicopters, black helicopters buzzing his place. So these are the sort of things that we've heard in earlier cases involving people who have had significant experiences related to extraterrestrials or any extraterrestrial vehicles, where they get harassed and intimidated into silence. So this happened to Ricky Sorrell, and Angela Joyner wrote stories on it, just basically publicising what was happening, the intimidation. And the stories appeared on February 3rd, February 4th, along with stories concerning the Air Force backtracking, the Air Force shifting its argument. The Air Force initially said that no Air Force jets were in the vicinity, because initial sightings of the craft, of the vehicle there, were that two Air Force jets were trying to chase it. The Air Force said no, we didn't have any jets in the vicinity, and then a few weeks later the Air Force backtracked and said no, well actually as it turned out we did have jets in the area. So Angela Joyner was kind of promoting the Air Force backtracking and the intimidation of Ricky Sorrell, and on February 7 she was summarily dismissed from her position, even though she had given 2 weeks' notice. She was summarily dismissed. Her computer was taken from her, keys taken away, and so forth. And so that was very unusual, because she had been there for a year and a half. Obviously, up until that time, there had been no problems with the newspaper. So it seems very unusual that this would happen just after she had done some stories commenting on the harassment and the backtracking of the Air Force. And I think, personally, I think there was some pressure brought to bear on the publisher and the editor to remove Angela Joyner from her position.
Right. Do we have any indication, Michael, where that pressure may have come from?
Well, we know that someone contacted the officials in the town, letting them know that this was the whole UFO issue was embarrassing the town. I mean, this is apparently what we are told. So one of the leading town officials contacted the newspaper management team and let them know that this whole thing was becoming an embarrassment to the town. I mean, Stephenville is not a very big town. I think roughly in the 70,000 to 80,000 figure in terms of population. So it's not all that big, so very conservative people live down there. And so apparently this was the story that was being relayed, that some displeasure was being displayed by town officials over the attention that the UFO story was bringing. Now that, of course, is the reason that was given. But I think the very fact that Richard Sorrell was being intimidated by black helicopters' late-night calls indicates that someone or some agency in the government did not want this story getting out, certainly didn't want people talking about specifics of what it was that was up there. And so I think there is evidence that someone or some agency definitely wanted to put a lid to this story, and Angela Joyner may have paid a price for to cover it.
Right, so it would be reasonable to assume that there may well be a connection between her firing and the confiscation of her computer and the government harassment of the witness, and not only the city council, because if it were just a city council of a small town, I mean, I'm familiar with a Texas city a little bit bigger than that, and there are different factions on the city council, and it would be very untoward for a city council to approach the publisher of the local newspaper and ask that one of its reporters be sacked just on political grounds, because there are different parties on that city council, even at the municipal level, even in Texas, so that in order for a city council plausibly to have made a call to the publisher to result in the confiscation of the computer, there must have been the mantra of national security been invoked.
I think there may have well been that element, because once national security is cited, officials are very quick to comply, because out of some sense of patriotic duty that if national security is involved, then they typically will try to do their best to comply with whatever agency is making that request.
You've been listening to our Exopolitics Radio interview with Dr. Michael Sala. This is your host, Alfred Weber. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. We'll now rejoin our feature interview with Dr. Michael Sala, director of the Exopolitics Institute. I'm your host, Alfred Weber.
I think there are some very other interesting elements to this story. The newspaper itself is owned by a chain, or is owned by a group of publishers that have been purchasing newspapers along the corridor of the Trans-America Highway, which is supposedly going to be linking United States, Mexico, and Canada. And that newspaper is in that kind of area. And so that may be one of the factors for why we did have this silencing happening, because if, as some have argued, that this Trans-America Corridor is something that is going to lead to a lot of protests in the future, and that local newspapers were being bought out so that they would not be used to give grievance, articulate the grievance by the local community, then we may have evidence of what may happen in the future as local newspapers try to deal with national issues that they just basically are told to be quiet. Some order comes from higher up, from the chain of management and ownership, and that may have been what happened in Angela Joyner's case.
Well, it's very interesting then that since January 1st, last week we had our colleague Paula Harris report on the San Diego sightings of just a week earlier, namely New Year's Eve 2008, the San Diego sightings, and that's at the border in a border area. And here we have January 8th, 2008, not strictly a border area, but in that sort of trans-border corridor, as you say, tied in with the Security and Prosperity Partnership and the North American Union Highway. That's a very interesting observation.
Yes, and there's another interesting angle here, and that is that that area is also one where there is a nuclear power plant in the area of Stephenville. This is not something that I've been able to get more details on at the moment, but apparently there are nuclear facilities in that area, so it may be that was what it was that was drawing the UFO or the vehicle there. The sightings have continued. They haven't stopped.
Yes, right, because we've had previous programs on Exopolitics Radio in which we've gone through the reports of UFO sightings over nuclear power plants and over nuclear facilities. So there's a very wide history of that going back to the 1950s. Now, speaking of the 1950s, I'm looking at an excerpt from a 1952 CIA document that another colleague of ours, Exopolitics Toronto, just released. It was a public CIA document, and this is a CIA memo dated August 1st, 1952, stating, quote, "It is strongly urged that no indication of CIA interest or concern reach the press or public in view that their probable alarmist tendencies to accept such interest as confirmatory of the soundness of published facts in the hands of the U.S. government, and the facts relate to, quote, the possible interplanetary aspects and alien origin of UFOs, among other things." So we have documentary evidence going back now over 50 years of government reference to the press and to exclusion of information from the press, which relates to the First Amendment, which specifies that the government shall make no rules or regulations regarding the press and shall take no adverse and discriminatory policies regarding the press. Why is it, do you think, that there is such a continuing sort of a, as was evidenced in this case, kind of the men in black helicopter harassment of the witnesses, coupled with a relatively public and relatively violent firing, relatively violent and overt firing of the reporter with such overt interference, especially in a case that's on the national and international news? What seems to be at stake here, Michael?
Well, that 1952 document is very interesting because, as you know, shortly afterwards, in January of 1953, you had the Robinson panel that was, in fact, sponsored by the CIA, and the CIA did not want its sponsorship to be known. So when the Robertson panel published conclusions, people believed that these were the conclusions of a panel of experts looking at the UFO data or the flying saucer data at the time. That's the way it was called in that early 50s area, the flying saucer phenomenon. And essentially what the Robinson panel recommended was a policy, a public education policy that would comprise two planks. One would be basically training the public, and that is to get the public to look at the whole flying saucer UFO phenomenon in a particular way, and that was always, well, you've got to look for hard evidence, and if there's no hard evidence, physical evidence and so forth, then it's not something that you can substantiate. And the second thing was to debunk all reports, to basically ridicule things, ridicule evidence, ridicule people, ridicule processes set up to kind of look at the whole extraterrestrial phenomenon in a serious way. And that continues to be a policy that has never been rescinded, and the CIA is involved in that up until the present day. And I think when we look at something like what happened here at Stephenville, what we see is the after effects of that, because you did have efforts to basically prevent the reporting of the sighting in an impartial way, to remove the reporter who was actually doing an impartial coverage of the issue, and to have then the issue reported in a way that kind of made it more easily ridiculed and debunked, which I believe is what happened immediately after she was sacked from that position. The Tribune began to run other stories that were kind of ridiculing the whole phenomenon. So it's that pattern in the past where the press, when it covers any UFO sighting, it does it in a way that's kind of dismissive, introducing the ridicule factor. And any reporter who deviates substantially from that really does risk their career or their job at the very least.
So you could say that Angelia Joyner was a victim of the ongoing effects of the Robertson panel? Is that one way of expressing that?
I think so. I think when we look at the Robertson panel and the way it operated, it was basically created a media culture where the whole UFO phenomenon was to be ridiculed, and anyone and any reporter that went beyond that was someone that was looked at in a very funny way. And I think this is something that really inhibited reporters covering issues, and Angela Joyner, I think, kind of suffered the legacy of that attitude, that official policy.
Right. Now, one of the aims that we set out in scheduling this program was to begin to discuss or put on the table some very specific measures that we can offer to begin to correct this aspect of the truth embargo. And so I think that you've just made a very important analytical discovery and just expressed a very important point in this ongoing debate, and that is that we have a policy that's been in place since the early 1950s with the Robertson panel, and that it's time to get rid of this policy, and that's the policy of ridicule, and that any reporter that steps over this ridicule line, as Ms. Joyner just did, summarily has their career destroyed and loses their job. And I'm wondering, from an exopolitics point of view, as both citizens and as activists in this area, what kinds of approaches can we, now that we've begun to identify the specific wrong here, what kind of steps can we now begin to bring to the table to end this practice, which is a central part of what we call, quote, the truth embargo? This is how the truth embargo is enforced.
Exactly, yes. I think there are some things that can be done. I think the main thing is to just expose any reporters who does cover these very serious issues in a very dismissive way. For example, after the X conference, there was that press conference at the National Press Club where a Washington Post reporter, Dana Milbank, covered the story and presented it in a way that made the whole conference, the press conference, appear to be kind of ridiculous or something that just wasn't to be taken seriously. And I think people took Dana Milbank to task and wrote letters or wrote articles protesting this. And I think that what's happened in the 5 months since then is that there has been a real sea change. I mean, we've had the presidential debates with the UFO issue. We've had Larry King covering the issue. We've had the sightings, the Stephenville sighting, another major press club conference that was covered by the international media very well. So I think what happened is that the consciousness has shifted so that the mainstream press does look at these issues in a more serious way. And those people, those reporters in the past who would kind of automatically, or whose job it was to ridicule this phenomenon, when it's pointed out how they are deliberately misconstruing information, and I believe you did something like that when it came to Dana Milbank. You did put out, I thought, an excellent commentary describing how he was trying to basically ridicule the whole phenomenon in a particular way, and that was a pattern. That as more and more people do that, I think reporters who do continue that kind of Robinson panel policy will be exposed, and then they can be forced to change or to leave their jobs.
Well, we certainly want to thank you for being with us tonight, and we look forward to your continuing participation with Exopolitics Radio. We've been with Dr. Michael Sala, who's the director of the Exopolitics Institute in Kona, Hawaii. Michael, you're having a conference out there soon, if you'd like to say a word about it.
Thank you, Alfred. Yes, we're having a conference out here from May 16 to 18. The conference title will be Earth Transformation, New Science, Consciousness and Contact. We have 10 speakers who will be addressing a number of issues related to extraterrestrial life. So definitely I recommend your audience to visit the website, which is just earthtransformation.com, and check out the speakers and the topics. And I want to thank you, Alfred, for again having me on the show and giving Exopolitics such excellent coverage and analysis.
Yes, thank you very much. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. This is your host, Alfred Weber. Would you like to download instantly the book Exopolitics by Alfred Weber that founded the field of exopolitics and was the cosmic trigger to a paradigm shift of opening to extraterrestrial civilizations? Would you like to download a CD-ROM of Exopolitics Radio Season 1 uncut version with interviews you have not heard on air? You can do so now by going right now to our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and downloading. There is no shipping, there is no waiting. Downloading the book Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe by Alfred Weber, and the CD-ROM Exopolitics Radio Season 1 Uncut Version. You'll be helping yourself, Exopolitics, and Exopolitics Radio into Season 2. Thank you.
Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. I think that this Exopolitics Radio program illustrates, in the words of our director, R.V. Romero, the deep necessity for all of us to continue our alertness, our discernment, our research into precisely what is happening. When a reporter gets fired and her computer confiscated for continuing to report on government harassment, of a UFO sighting. Why is that happening? It's not happening because of, quote, embarrassment to the town. It's happening because of a long-standing 56-year-old policy that has to do with the control of this planet by a narrow elite that owns the money supply, the gold supply, the uranium supply, that owns the monarchies, that owns the governments and all of the politicians. And that if you, who are designated as slaves and second-class citizens inside this matrix of virtual reality, which the upper-dimensional extraterrestrials are trying to urge us to break through, continue to allow this to happen, well, the same result is going to perdure and endure, especially when we begin to notice that these UFO sightings since New Year's Day, we had the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day sighting of 2008 at the U.S.-Mexican border in San Diego. And then we had the January 8th, 2008, on the North American Union corridor just 60 miles from the Texas White House. And we have the report, as Dr. Michael Sala said, that there's a company that's going around buying up all of these community newspapers along the North American corridor so that people cannot object to this North American corridor that will be going in furtherance of the North American Union, which will be more consolidation of the purported New World Order, the purported North American Union, which is part of the Trilateral Commission, part of the Rockefeller, City of London, House of Rothschild, New World Order that is being put in, that has implemented the extraterrestrial truth embargo since the late 1940s and early 1950s, that put in place through the CIA the Robertson Panel, that has resulted in the policy of ridicule, officially ridiculing, firing all reporters, and harassing and destroying the lives of any civilian witnesses since the 1950s. So we have to begin to wake up, resist the shredding of the First Amendment, and stand up for our First Amendment rights. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director RV Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and wrapped in the strength of the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms of Canada, day, week, and life. Thank you.